webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution. And now, here's Glenn Klein online.
Thank you, Robert Moore, and greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's hump day, Wednesday, April 13th, 2011, the only April 13th, 2011 in the history of humanity. Welcome in on this special edition of the Gospel Revolution webcast, coming to you live, the dynamic duo, coming to you from Houston, Texas, where we are working on some Gospel Revolution video blogging, going quite well, I'm happy to say. And normally, you know, I'm greeting him from the Bay of the Holy Spirit. Sean's there, and we'll be taking your calls tonight. And he is ensconced in the studio. But just a few feet from me is the very handsome and talented and the founder and president of said Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. Hi, Mikey.
Hey, Glenn. How are things in Houston tonight?
Mike, it's a very pleasant evening. I'm happy to report the Houston weather is quite nice. And I have to say, for all those that have not seen Michael for a while, that you will be on YouTube. We were working on the Gospel Revolution video blogs, but I can report up close and personal, you are a very handsome man still.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and I have to say I have to return the compliment. Not because I have to, but...
Well, I do appreciate it, very much so. We will be talking about the video blogs throughout the evening, and we will give you an opportunity to see some of those as we proceed with this here webcast. And but I have to point out, Houston, we do have a problem. You see today, Michael, where they announced where all the retired space shuttles will be going to? And Houston, the home of the space program of the United States of America, they dissed Houston, Mikey. Houston will not be getting one.
Really? That doesn't seem to be fair.
Well, I think I have to point out that all the places, ironically, where the United States federal government, which is run, of course, by President Barack Obama, made the decision that these highly attractive tourism attractions are all going to places where that are controlled by Democrats, places like Los Angeles and New York and Washington, D.C. But here in the very red state of Texas, no space shuttle for Houston. They're very upset here in Houston.
Well, I guess that's one of the perks of being in power, eh?
No doubt. To the victors go the spoils. Now watch, ladies and gentlemen, how I segue nicely into the gospel from this. Because a victory was accomplished over 2,000 years ago at a place called Golgotha. And, Mikey, to the victors go the spoils. We received victory at the cross. And, of course, especially for those of us that were in the Word of Faith movement, we were taught that we were literally endued with power from on high to do the works, greater works even, Jesus said, we would do than he did. But that's not what he was talking about, was it?
No, that's for sure. Jesus himself did the greater work in the ability to believe and did a miraculous, truly miraculous work of believing for the entire human race. And Jesus performed that for us. We actually became, if I could say this in this context, we actually became the spoils. We are, we didn't have anything to do with this redemption. And, you know, the Psalm says that that Jesus would be Lord and that God would give him the heathen of the earth for an inheritance. So we're a package deal. This is not a decision on our part. It's not a belief on our part. It's a wonderful thing to believe, but you only believe truth. You can only believe truth. You can't believe to make something true.
You just came back from beautiful New Brunswick, Fredericton, where you had a series of meetings up there with Tom and Linda Wilby. And you taught about the things we have been endued with, the kind of power. Talk about the spoils that the victors get. Truly, everything has been given to us pertaining to life and godliness. But what were they talking about? What was that talking about? And what did you talk about in Fredericton regarding what we've been imputed with?
You know, Paul opened this up so beautifully when he said that the that God hath made unto us in Christ wisdom, righteousness, sanctification, and redemption. And this was the topic while I was there. Paul placed wisdom and sanctification in the very same category as what we understand to be imputed righteousness, and also redemption, of course, of the world. And so there's four basic things that all humans can absolutely count on that they have, not something they need to get. This is something that they have. All humans on the face of earth have imputed at birth into their life at conception. They all have wisdom, righteousness, sanctification, and redemption. These are not things that people gain. This totally turns the psychology of this entire, the psychology that we understand on this planet. The entire understanding of spirituality is turned on its ear. When we begin to embrace Paul's understanding about imputed wisdom, you say, but Mike, you know, the scriptures talk about seeking wisdom. Yes, and the scriptures talked about seeking righteousness and seeking for redemption and going through the rites for purification and sanctification. But now we have been given the wisdom of God. The wisdom, the righteousness, the sanctification, and redemption is all imputed. And when a human being can start operating from what they have instead of trying to gain what we already got, you see, the way that we're dealing with life now truly is a very powerful understanding that we are no longer trying to gain wisdom or get wisdom, or we're not trying to gain righteousness or redemption, and we're not trying to get sanctified. We are all of those things. These aren't things that, and they're not even things that are part of us. These things are us. This is what has been imputed, and this is what of the human race and the God and man one. This is the oneness that exists with God and man, is that we now are the wisdom, righteousness, sanctification, and redemption of God Himself. And that is good news. And I think Glenn is switching to to his computer, so I'm going to keep talking here until Glenn comes back, which isn't going to be a difficult thing at all. You know, yes. Hello? No, I don't. Hey, George, yeah, it's good to hear you. My goodness. Have you been listening?
Since Glenn got knocked off, maybe I'd come in.
Well, thank you. Yes, I'm sure that he'll be nicely surprised that we just went right on without him. How are you tonight? How are you doing?
Good, George. I'm doing real
awesome.
Good. I called Glenn today, and we were talking a little bit. I don't know if he talked to you about what I was talking to him about or not.
He told me that you had a great revelation, insight.
Hello, fellas. I'm back.
Hey, we were just going to go on without you.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time, Georgie.
What I found out is the gospel rolls on without any of us.
Isn't that the truth?
And that's good news.
That is good news. We just get to go along for the ride, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, at one time, Mike, I used to think, you know, what would happen if something happened to Mike? Well, I know what would happen. The gospel would keep rolling on.
Absolutely.
George has, of course, very active efforts on the internet through FullGrace.com and on Facebook.
Not so
George
much
is, first of all,
anymore.
George. All right. Well. All right. So should we need to have a funeral for Bold Grace? Is that what you're saying?
Not so much a funeral, but most of my stuff I do on Facebook now. Yeah.
Okay. Well, first of all, tell the beautiful humans, Jordy, about your book.
Oh, my book. Well, first off, the book is in line with what Mike has been talking about lately, that we are all one.
Yeah.
And I've often heard Mike say that people who have an understanding, and Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, people that have an understanding of the gospel of grace and peace, we all really have the same testimony.
Yes, that is true. That's one of the most remarkable things between my Christian experience. We all had a different testimony. You know, I used to be gay, and this one used to smoke, and that one used to do drugs, and this changed and that changed. Everybody's testimony was different. But in the gospel, it's all the same. It's all exactly the same. Everybody's glad to be free from legalism.
Well, and that gave me inspiration for my 500-page book.
My goodness.
Let's see. I started on it on a Sunday afternoon, and I think around 1 o'clock, and I was done with it about 1:30. And the book has
you're ahead of me.
Yeah, 500 pages, Mike, in 30 minutes.
Okay, fill us in.
Now, the name of the book is "The Gospel According to Jesus Christ: A Scandal Revealed."
Yeah.
Okay. Now,
the idea
behind the book is, I have 10 chapters. I'm going to go over them real quick, what the titles of the chapters are. And I believe that each one of us have a story that relates to each chapter. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready. Go for it.
Okay. Chapter 1, In the Beginning Before Christianity. Chapter 2, The Entrance into Christianity. Now, think of each one, you know, because I'm sure we all have a story in each one. Chapter 3.
Uh-huh.
The Advancement in Christian Beliefs. Number 4,
okay.
The Promotions from Within Christianity. Boy, we all got those promotions, remember?
Mm-hmm, yes.
We sat in a pew, and then we got elder, and then we were a deacon, we were elder, we were a pastor, we were a prophet, we were all these things, right?
Absolutely, then, climbing the ladder.
Then in chapter 5, the title is The Long Fall to Ground Zero. Chapter 6 is Starting Over, Out of the Law and Into Grace. Chapter 7, Hitting the Reset Button and Leaving It All Behind. Chapter 8, I'm Mad as Hell They Lied. Chapter 9, Grace and Peace, It's Okay Now. And the last chapter is The End of It All, The Scandal. Now, the amazing thing about this 500-page book is only 3 pages have anything written on it. The cover page, the title page, and the accumulation in page 500. I give people the ending to the story. The reason I left the pages blank, I want people to write their own story according to what I've titled the chapter. Because
oh, wow.
I'm sure everybody can write according to what those titles are.
Absolutely.
But page 500 is the culmination of it all. And on page 500, it says, "It is finished. Jesus Christ, Son of God, your brother."
That's awesome.
That's our testimony, fellas.
That's it.
It's all over. It's all over. It is finished.
Awesome.
And the other thing I came, the other thing real quick, this morning, I was on somebody's Facebook, and they had mentioned something about, you know, they felt God had sent them somewhere. And it occurs to me that God sent somebody on a mission 2,000 years ago, and since that time, he hasn't sent anybody anywhere.
Yeah.
The person that he sent 2,000 years ago took two men. He took the Jew, which was the believer, and he took the Gentile, which was the unbeliever, into his body and made the two one. So therefore, God is not sending anybody anywhere. If there's anything that needs to be done, God goes himself. And he goes himself because we and he are one.
Absolutely.
So
I like the
anytime
way you
somebody
think,
tells
George.
Me that God sent them, and I'll say, no, God went. God didn't send you, God went. And God didn't call
Absolutely.
You, God went.
Yes.
And I honestly believe, you know, thinking on this one, that we are one with him. And that it really is like Paul says, you know, it's he that lives and not us. And it's just, it's been amazing to me how, if I just think about it is finished, no matter what the question is, it is finished. There is no question, you know, there's only, you know, there's not really a question because it is finished. And it goes back to it is finished.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anybody that's listening wants the book, all they got to do is go to the Facebook page and I'll send you a file of it. But really, like I said, it's your story. And your story, I would bet that the three of us online right now, and that the only thing that would change in our stories would be the people, the places, and the times.
That's all. You're exactly right.
Our stories would be so close, it would be scary.
Yes.
And there's a real comfort in that for me.
Yeah.
To know that no matter what I've gone through, there's a pretty good chance that everybody else has gone through the same thing.
Yeah, you know,
gotten to the point where we can share it with people. And hopefully the gospel gets us to a place where we can share that, whatever that thing is. Because I know there's a lot of people hurting in the world. And I can guarantee you there's probably not too many things that anyone could tell the three of us that we haven't experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and the same with all the other gospel revolutionaries, you know, the people that have understood you know, what we've been trying to say over the years, and it really is amazing, you know, because Paul spoke of actually that the gospel was the testimony of God.
Yeah.
And because we are all one, it's really, you know, there really is, as you were pointing out, no such thing as an individual testimony, because all of our stories are exactly the same.
Yeah.
Because what this is all about, it's about God's testimony about us. It's not our testimony about him.
Yep.
And, you know, we can share where we've been and what we've experienced, which really does seem to be quite similar. When you enter into a pursuit of an attempt to be spiritual on some external basis, it is going to take you on a merry-go-round.
Yep.
And that merry-go-round is going to spin faster and faster, and you are going to fall off. And that's why your emphasis on that, everything that is spiritual is a past tense. It's a historical event. And people are trying to spiritualize today and tomorrow, and spirituality was completely fulfilled 2,000 years ago. Completely fulfilled. And God and the human race became one. There is no difference between the two. So it really is the testimony of God himself.
That's good news. Hey, I got one more and then I'll go. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. This might upset a few feathers, but I've upset a few in the past. It also occurred to me that Christianity is a children's religion.
Yes, I understand what you're saying.
What I mean by that is, Glenn, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Glenn,
and you're breaking up really bad. You're going to have to get on something else because you're not really coming in at all.
Who's that, Glenn?
Yeah, you can't hear me?
Really coming.
Yeah, I can hear you, Glenn.
You just really broke it up really bad, so.
Okay, but anyway, the reason I say it's a childlike religion is Christianity tries to keep people as children. We all know mm-hmm. that in Judaism, the child didn't have any rights.
Yeah.
And they were put under tutors and governors until the time that was appointed. And once they became sons, then they had full rights. Well,
yes.
Christianity tries to keep people as children and never lets them realize their sonship. The gospel reveals sons.
Absolutely.
And if I remember Paul saying at one time that the whole world, creation is waiting for the sons of God to be revealed.
Yeah.
And Christianity is never going to reveal them.
No, absolutely. Only the gospel reveals the sons of God. And that revelation took place 2,000 years ago. So it's just, the people aren't waiting on the revelation. The revelation's waiting on the people.
Exactly. Hey, well, listen, guys, I'm going to let you go and let somebody else get in here. I love you guys. And
Georgie.
Hey, I want to hear about the filming that's taking place.
Absolutely. It's been fun. We got a lot of work done today. And it's up and running.
You guys going to talk about that during the webcast?
Yeah, Glenn's going to fill everybody in on what we've got done and where you can take a look. It is already up and running. It's amazing.
Okay. Well, I'm going downstairs and get on my computer and listen to the rest of the show. Love you guys.
Thanks, George.
Thanks, George.
There's George Howell. Michael, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're in and out. Some words. Go ahead and let's see how it goes.
All right. Well, what I'm going to do, Sean, let's go to the break, and I'm going to get on Well, I'll tell you what's going on. Let's. we want to thank George Howell for calling in, and let's go to the break now, Sean. And when we return, hopefully, all of our technical glitches worked out as we continue from Houston on the Gospel Revolution Radio Network.
In this new single, Is Your Heart Kinder Than Your Doctrine?, Mike Williams unravels some of the most popular and pervasive doctrinal misnomers in evangelical Christianity.
You see, in evangelical Christianity, they knew that the God who loved them could not be this God who's going to throw people into hell simply because they don't believe, they've not had the opportunity to believe. They've not reached the age of accountability. All of the rules that we've set up, who don't believe their own doctrine to the point to where they have to set up these, well, if and but or maybes about the hardcore doctrine that only believers go to heaven. You know, that is an evangelical doctrine. I taught it for many, many years. And if you want life to change from the existence that you have known throughout your Christian life, embrace the fact that redemption is for everybody and that sin was taken care of once and for all. You'll never see somebody else on this planet differently until you know that God is not angry with anybody else.
Is Your Heart Kinder Than Your Doctrine? This series, taught from the Book of Romans, is the perfect complement to the Gospel 101 CD. Like Gospel 101, this single is available in discounted packs of 10, 25, and 50 CDs. Order yours today at gospelrevolution.com.
Welcome back. Does this sound better, Michael?
Yes. Yeah. A little tinny, but at least we get everything you're saying this time. So.
Well, how ironic is it that we are practically sitting next to each other and we can't hear each other. But, ladies and gentlemen, we are back with you and glad to have you with us. And,
yes, we are.
Inviting you now to give us a call at 813-425-5773. That's the number outside the United States or Canada. If you are listening live or on the Internet, you can call, or outside the United States or Canada, 813-425-5773. anywhere else in North America, 1-800-436-3260. 800-436-3260. Sean is waiting to take your call, and we'll put you online immediately. So we are happy to hear from you. And like George was alluding to before, we have started the process of creating a video library for video blogs for the Gospel Revolution. We'll be talking about that later on in the program. And that's the purpose for my trip to Houston. And we had quite a productive day with the help of the Asian invasion, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely did. It was amazing to have the help, and just really was fantastic. It was, it's a process, and I think one thing that people will appreciate is of the videos that we shot today, you will see that we progressed in technique and in quality all the way through. Right up until the last one, and it's like number five, it's like, yes, that's just right. Not that all the other four aren't really good, but, you know, it's all a learning process. And, you know, we could go back and just say, you know, let's go back and redo all of them. But I think it's really good that people see the process. And you know, we're humans. Doing the best we can, and we really actually did a good job today. I was really thrilled with it, and we had excellent help for sure. God Himself knows that we would have never got it done between Glenn Klein and Mike Williams. That's for sure.
No, that's, you know, all joking aside, it's one of the most powerful things, Michael, about the psychology of the gospel is being at peace with one's contradictions or one's weaknesses. We, you and I are just not technically inclined. We have great people like Jeff Robertson and Sean O'Halloran around us. Robert Moore, Matt Perry, that's helped with the commercials, and so many other people that allows the gospel to get out effectively. We do what we do, and I'm all right with it. I have no problem at all saying that I have some shortcomings. That's a hard thing to do in religion. Religion makes people who normally would be honest and forthright, that makes good people liars.
Really does. You know, dishonesty seems, for me, in my experience, not just with others, but for myself, Christianity is just a banner for dishonesty. It is a foundation for dishonesty, because when you are touting self-righteousness and works and belief and all on your own, which no human being can measure up to, you literally have to become dishonest to claim that you are doing any of it, even if you say you are believing. And you believe all the time and you never doubt. You have to lie to say that, because there is no such thing as a human being that doesn't doubt about anything or in everything. It's just a part of humanity to believe and doubt. The other side of belief is doubt. And let me tell you, you talk about a contradiction. The most powerful thing about the gospel is that you can doubt, and it's okay. In fact, it will increase your belief if you are free to doubt. But in Christianity, doubt is a surefire ticket to hell. Doubt is walking out from under the protection of God and the relationship with God. You can't doubt at all. He that doubteth is damned. I can quote all the verses for you. But in the understanding of the gospel, we know that that is all fulfilled, that we're not under that pressure for belief. And, you know, if I wake up one morning and I just doubt it all, that's quite all right. And that freedom is such a powerful thing that, you know, there's not a line to walk. There's not a road to find. There's not a destiny to pursue. This literally is true freedom. And I remember just a few years ago, I did the series about being freed from faith. And my goodness, you would have thought I'd stood up and said a string of curse words in front of people in the most inappropriate place to talk about being freed from faith. But that truly is the power of the gospel, is that you're freed from all requirements and all of this external spirituality. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my. So, yeah, we have contradictions. And I am very comfortable with the things that I am gifted to do. I am equally as comfortable with the things that I don't have a clue, that I have to lean on others like though they were a part of my physical body itself. And just like what happened today, I mean, there was there's a support group, you know, there's people that do what they do, and that's marvelous.
No doubt. I'm reminded of the quote that we talked about last week with our new friend Chad Holtz, where he said that he had given up on the idolatry of belief.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you're pointing out that on the opposite side of faith is doubt. And
yes,
because Jesus, before the cross, was setting up all the parameters of which people had to line up with in order to be redeemed, the toughest one, of course, of all the ones, was they had to believe. But they didn't have to believe once. They had to believe with perfect, undying, unfaltering faith. And it is only in the faith of Christ that we find that kind of belief, and that is where we find our redemption. What freedom it is to know that he believed for us and that he believed in us in order to go to the cross.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, if for people to say they believe in Jesus or that they believe in Christ and then to turn around and make it all about us, I mean, if there is a God, if there is a Christ, if there is a Jesus, then this has been something that's a work that was done by them, not by us. And the love is not for us to learn how to love God, but to learn that we are loved by God, and not that we kind of have to learn how to believe in God, but to know that God believes in us. That's what I believe about God. You know, people might ask, well, what do you believe? Well, I believe that God believes in me. And the things that I believe he believes about me, that's what is revealed in the gospel. He believes, let me tell you what God thinks about me. And let me go ahead and say that it's not just about me, it's about every human being on the face of this planet. This is what God believes about me. He believes I am filled with wisdom, that I am righteous, that I am sanctified, and I am redeemed. That's what God believes about me. I don't have to try to believe that for myself, or about anyone else. And when I see another human being, I don't have to try to believe the best about them. The thing I need to know is that God himself believes in them. And it changes the psychology of relationships. It changes the sociology of involvement between people and races. You know, we have in the Gospel Revolution, goodness, there's, I think, every race, creed, and color, size, and shape that is possible around this planet. And these barriers and walls just do not exist, because you don't look at people to surmise what you think about them. Remember what Paul said? Paul said, "I don't know anything about anybody but Christ and him crucified."
Right.
He said, I choose. In fact, he said, "I choose to know nothing. I don't want to know anything." And, man, I tell you, when you see other human beings as perfect people, they're righteous people, they're holy, you know, you can, and then it causes you to embrace their contradictions, your own contradictions. We know that we have strengths, we know that we have things that are
we're vulnerable to. And but we can accept that. We can accept it. And not only can we accept it, thank God we can learn to live with those things, not be in denial of them.
What a powerful stance that is, Michael. I mean, and here's the ironic thing, is that when we set up false pretense and false standards, the irony here is that the very standards that we set up, which are false, which are unattainable, are the very things that people within Christianity and other religions, of course, end up stumbling upon and being obsessed by. One of the greatest examples that has come down the pike recently, and there's almost one every day, for sure every week, was on our email that went out today about this legislator in Indonesia. And this Indonesia lawmaker who helped pass a tough anti-pornography law, he resigned Monday after he got caught watching sexually explicit videos on his computer during a parliamentary debate. The scandal has, no doubt, transfixed the predominantly Muslim nation since a local photojournalist filmed Ari Finto, a member of the staunchly, this is the name of the party, folks, the Islamic Prosperous Justice Party. He was gazing at the downloaded porn sites last Friday. Indonesia is considered a secular country of 237 million people, but it has more Muslims than any other country in the world. Though most are moderate, a small extremist fringe has become more vocal in recent years. Does this sound familiar to anybody out there? They pushed through several controversial laws, including the pornography law. Supporters say the law is needed to keep the country from sliding into moral decay, while critics say it's vaguely worded and the penalties are way too harsh. Check this out. The law calls for prison terms of up to 15 years and fines for everything from kissing in public and exposure of, quote, a woman's sensual body parts to displaying erotic artwork. Broadcasting, possessing, and storing pornographic materials are also prohibited. Now, the classic thing, this guy's a Muslim, Michael, this legislator in Indonesia, and the guy could not help himself. It's bad enough that he was checking out porn after he passes this law, but he was doing it brazenly on the floor of the parliament, for God's sake. You talk about yeah. being obsessed with a law that you set up for in your own mind and in your own heart. It is insanity gone to seed.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting to hear this, and it repeats itself many times, but people are blind to the real problem, just like in this nation. Was it Indonesia, did you say that they had,
Yes.
See, just like there. See, they think that the problem is immorality, but the problem is religion. And my friend John Hall, who was a 32-year veteran of the FBI, head of the legal department for the FBI, a historian, constitutional expert, was telling me about the book, The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire. And he said, you know, every time you hear a preacher get on, they'll make reference to if they make reference to the book, The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire, they
right.
always attribute immorality as the reason for the fall of the empire. And he said, I don't know what book they read. He said, when an empire falls, whatever it falls to takes over. And he said, when the Roman Empire fell, it did not become the immoral Roman Empire. It became the Holy Roman Empire. And he said what caused the Roman Empire to fall is what took over after it fell. And he pointed out that Catholicism was the fall of the Roman Empire.
No doubt.
That it was not as the story is told, immorality and lasciviousness. That it was actually just the opposite. And when he pointed that out to me, you know, it's the simple things that are just so wise He said, when he said, you know, it went from the Roman Empire to the Holy Roman Empire. And what it fell to took over.
Boy, they really did. And to the point where if anybody follows international current events, you've got the big controversy in Rome, in the capital of Italy, is that they got their prime minister, Berlusconi, in a sex scandal.
Yeah, and look what's happening here in the United States right now. This very battle is taking place, and they're trying to say that homosexuality and adultery and pornography is going to be the fall of the country, but look what's happening. It is religion. I mean, what they're wanting to do is turn this into, they say something, Glenn, that totally isn't true. This is not a Christian nation. Never has been a Christian nation. But they want to turn it into a Christian nation. That is when the United States falls, is when it becomes a Christian nation.
Exactly.
That's when democracy fails. That's when liberty halts, is when religion, not sin, when religion takes over government, that's when government falls.
You know without a shadow of a doubt that the kissing cousin of Islam, of course I probably shouldn't call it a kissing cousin, we might get thrown in prison for 15 years, but the kissing cousin of Islam, Christianity, would love to have the power. They talk about the religious fringe in Indonesia. Well, we have a religious fringe in this country too. They're probably more powerful than the religious fringe in Indonesia, in a country that's a little smaller in population than the United States. But the moral... Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, I just heard a disconnect. You know that the religious community in this country, the religious right, if you will, would love to be able to legislate that kind of anti-pornography, anti-sexuality,
Absolutely.
And they're doing it right now. What is the fight about keeping gay and lesbian people as second-class citizen about? What is that about, if not making a moral distinction on sexuality?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the all of the cries of the... See, and here's the thing, is that fear is the thing that pushes religion into the limelight and causes governments to fall to religion, is fear. And right now, I mean, that's what happened to the German government when it fell to, and really Hitler was a religion in and of himself, if you study his history and the things that he actually believed himself. But it was a fall to religion, but it was out of fear. And the only, we were looking for salvation. We're looking for someone to save us. Who's going to save us out of this? And what has caused it? Well, obviously, what has caused it is God, you know, is against all of us because of the immorality in this country, because of homosexuality, because of abortion, and the list goes on, and it drives people in fear to allow religion to take over their government while they stand and say, we've got to take our government back. Sorry, you've never had it. And if right-thinking people ever wake up in this country, religion is not going to have our government. And that is the downfall of this government. It is not as they have warned, which their warnings have all proven wrong. Look at every one of the things they said. If this country embraces this, this is the downfall of this country. The judgment of God is coming, and this country is over with. Every step that they warn about those things, this country has gotten stronger. And now they're warning about, of course, the whole gay issue. Remember they said if abortion becomes the law of the land, God will abandon this country, and that will be it for the United States. That did not happen. And but every step that religion has gained a foothold in this country, the weaker the power of the people becomes, and the stronger the centralized government gets. Religion wants power over individuals. believe me, Christianity is never going to fight for the liberty of the individual. Don't tell me that's what's going to happen. It is not going to happen. They don't fight for the liberty of all individuals. Religion doesn't do it. I don't care whether they're Democrat or Republican or independent or otherwise. They don't fight for the liberty of the individual. They fight to take the liberty away from certain individuals so that they can rule over them and that they're the only ones that have any power.
And the bottom line is, and getting back to this legislator, we've seen this so many times, and we've talked about it for 5 years, we've talked about it for our entire experience in the gospel,
yeah.
But the guy in Indonesia, Michael, was trying to get pornography out of his own life by making it illegal, punishment to up to 15 years in prison. What the religious leaders in this country really want to do is legislate morality into their own hearts and minds. They think this is why so many pedophiles go into the priesthood and Catholicism. They think if they just go into that kind of restrictive environment, then therefore they won't engage in that kind of behavior. It is exactly the opposite of what happened, just like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. And when that awakening comes, that these are actually the people who are trying to pass these laws, as you pointed out so clearly, these are people who are passing laws against their own actions, not against yours, not against mine. They're trying to legislate their own hearts, and they don't understand that the only thing you can do is embrace yourself where you are and understand yourself from where you are and stop this god-awful trying to spiritualize morality and trying to enforce then. Of course, if that's what's spiritual, then you have to enforce your morality on other people's lives. And that is the downfall of the Roman Empire. That was the downfall of the German nation. And that is the attempt that is going on now in this country. And believe me, it's not the homosexuals downtown in Montrose, in Houston, or in San Francisco, or downtown Atlanta, or wherever they're getting together. It's not drag queens. It's not drag queens going to bring this country down. They're not trying to take over the country, folks. That's not what's is threatening the power and the liveliness of this great liberty that we have. And this.
Well, I'll tell you what, Michael. The vehement nature of the gay rights movement in this country is in direct opposition or a direct reaction to the violence and the bigotry that they've experienced from the Christian community. Because, as we pointed out on a number of programs before, the gay community needs the revelation of their righteousness every bit as bad and as desperately as the Christian community does. And when people respond out of their own insecurity and out of a defensive posture, of course they're going to be more aggressive than they might otherwise be. But just like Michael said, the last thing that the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community wants to do in this country is take over the country. They just want to live their lives. They just want to be free like everybody else. And I could not concur more. You know, it's really interesting that there are obviously economic policies and policies of foreign affairs that do jeopardize a national standing and an economic basis for the country. No doubt about it. But it's not a moral issue. This is the thing, Michael. This is everybody in religion wants to spiritualize everything. Even as you pointed out before, the Dalai Lama saying that God must be upset with us because of the tsunami. And the fact of the matter is that these decisions that we make nationally, these decisions that we make as families or as individuals, our life decisions, they have absolutely no spiritual component at all. However, this concept that you call the psychology of the gospel, when a person makes a decision to contemplate consistently and on the beautiful good news of our equality with each other, our oneness in God, then some stuff can happen with the stealthy nature of the gospel, as Jackie Bernard called it, can absolutely have an effect on our emotions and our ability to make decisions. But no matter what decision we make coming out of our heart, it's still not a spiritual thing. It's a life thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, see, we've taken away what is spiritual and made it natural, and we've taken that which is natural and turned it into spiritual.
Exactly.
That which is spiritual is the cross, and we've turned everything about the cross into something natural. It is man's actions and deeds, it's his belief, it's his faith, it's his obedience. We have turned that which is absolutely spiritual into something that is nothing more than natural. And we turn everyday life, which is nothing but natural, into that which is spiritual. And, man, you talk about living your life on an upside-down treadmill. It is a bizarre thing when you begin to realize it. And when people begin to embrace the gospel, this begins to invert. It's like turning a pyramid on its head. There's no stability. When you take that which is spiritual and make it natural, and then you take that which is natural and make it spiritual, what happens as the gospel comes into the heart is that this pyramid, if you will, if we can look at it in this shape, it begins to turn back on its foundation again, where the strength is in the base and the possibility of teetering or falling one way or the other is just absolutely not there. But this inversion, if you will, of spirituality, of that which is spiritual and that which is natural, it has been a heinous thing that has happened in removing the gospel out of its proper place, which the gospel, let me tell you what the gospel does. The gospel takes that which is spiritual and lets it be spiritual. The gospel takes that which is natural and lets it be natural. End of story.
That is such a beautiful concept, and one that we cannot encourage. You actually did a series called The Upside Down Kingdom.
Yes, I did, yeah.
And what would, Michael, besides some of the things you just talked about, what were some of the other thoughts that went into the identifying this thing as an upside-down kingdom?
You're asking me about a tape series that was done over 10 years ago.
Well, forget about that. When I say upside-down kingdom, what comes to your mind?
Well, this kingdom is upside-down in the aspects that basically in the aspects that we've been talking about. We say that the many must believe in the one. And the fact is the one has believed in the many.
Yes.
That is one of the absolute upside down positions of the kingdom of God. And we say that that all must be obedient to have God in their life, and the upside down kingdom says that God Himself fulfilled all obedience, so that He could be one with us. The upside down kingdom, people used to have to praise so that they could experience the presence of God, and because God could only dwell in perfection, so He said, "Send up some praises that are perfect, and I'll dwell in the praises." But now in this upside-down kingdom, God does not dwell in the praises of His people. He dwells in His people, therefore we praise. And you say, how do we praise? We praise by breathing. We praise by living. We praise by working. We praise by talking with each other, by fellowship, by telling jokes, for God's sake. That is how we carry out this incredible life.
We live.
We live. We just simply live. That is the whole issue. That is spirituality maximized, and it's the thing that will cause you to act the most spiritual is when you accept that that life is just natural, and that is acting spiritual. Acting, if you want to act spiritual, tell a joke, for God's sake. You know, if go to a movie, you know, enjoy the trees, you know, enjoy your relationships with people. But the fact of it is that that can only be done if we remove spirituality off of all of the everyday life and let spirituality be what was taken care of for us. We don't have to be spiritual for God. God was spiritual for us. It's just a completely upside-down kingdom.
We are as spiritual, folks, as we're ever going to be. And here's the thing. You go on to on Facebook and people ask their religious affiliation and they say spiritual. Or you go onto a dating site and they say spiritual. Some people say they're not spiritual. They're spiritual, too. They just don't know it. They and God are one. You can't get any more spiritual than that.
Yeah.
Once that's decided in your heart, and you understand that in your mind, that we are one, then the question becomes, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
You know, George was referring to Christianity earlier, Michael, being a child's religion.
Absolutely.
That's one of the most powerful things, man. I use that phrase a lot, but understand that men and women on the planet, boys and girls, are actually sons of God, not children anymore. We are grown heirs of the kingdom of God, equal heirs to Christ himself. And just like it's important when your children are grown to realize that they are now adults and they are free to do as they please without you as a parent imposing your will on them, which you did when they were children. At the cross, Michael, God said it was for freedom that I set you free.
Yeah, he brought us into full sonship. The only way we could be free is if we're sons. And that's it. The only way we could be free is if we are sons. Because, as George pointed out, that we were children kept under the law and kept under tutors and governors, until that time that was appointed by the Father, until faith would come. And faith did come. And it was not our faith. It was the faith of God himself manifested in Christ, the faith of Jesus himself that Paul relied on, that we now are sons of God. We're not struggling to maintain some spiritual content in our lives. The spiritual content of our life was settled 2,000 years ago, that he has made unto us wisdom, righteousness, sanctification, and redemption. If you want to call this a pyramid again, the four corners of this pyramid and the foundation of our spirituality are these four things. Wisdom is not something you're looking for. Wisdom is something you have. Sanctification is not something you're trying to get. It's something you have. Redemption is not something you're trying to get. It's something you have. Righteousness is not something you're striving for. It's something you have. It's something you are. It's who you are.
Exactly.
And,
what a powerful reality, ladies and gentlemen. And I'll tell you, I feel saved afresh, my friend. That's the thing. It's the salvation is the renewing of the mind, folks, the cleansing of the soul. And the way that that has happened is through the power of God that Paul called the gospel. The gospel, the power of God unto salvation. Cannot recommend it enough. And for those of you who are intrigued more, go to gospelrevolution.com. We should have our first video plugs up there just recorded today here in Houston. While some of the technical aspects were challenging, even on the webcast tonight, we know that your effort and your support of the gospel is going to continue to pay dividends as more and more people understand, whether they be from a Christian background or a Buddhist background, or they're atheists, or they're agnostic, or they're Muslim, or Christian scientists, or Scientologists, or whatever, yeah. Jewish, whatever they are, they need to know, as we all know, that they are perfect just the way they are in the eyes of the Almighty. That's good news, ladies and gentlemen. That's the gospel. And that is the Gospel Revolution webcast for this Wednesday night. Mikey, normally I, you know, say good night to you and, you know, talk to you tomorrow. But I'll see you in about 30 seconds.
See you in just a few seconds, for sure.
All right, buddy. Thank you very much.
Glenn, it was wonderful. Thank you, Glenn. And thanks, everybody who's listening in, either live or through the archives. What a wonderful night. What a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful night. And we hope it was as much a pleasure to you as it was for me, and I speak for Glenn also. I can do this because I know that if he and I were the only two who enjoyed this, as far as we're concerned, that would be enough. But the fact of it is we've had a great joy of having you join in and enjoy this feast of the Gospel Revolution.
No doubt. Also want to thank Jeffro Robertson for everything that he does as the minister of the Gospel Revolution. Sean O'Halloran back in the studios in Tampa Bay, and everybody, as Michael said, who's a part of the Gospel Revolution in any capacity at all. Enjoy the YouTube videos. We'll talk to you in 1 week's time. Let us hear from you this week at gospelrevolution.com. Until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!